Welcome to Come Receive the Light, the national radio ministry of the Orthodox Christian Church. Today we're going to start the new year with a journey.
One way I describe in the book is that coming back from Falam, it was a little bit like taking the shoot off of a plant and trying to plant it in soil elsewhere, hoping that it will grow into a life of its own.
We'll also talk about what the Orthodox Church is doing through the IOCC for the victims of the tsunami disaster.
CWS disaster assessment and relief teams are on their way to the region now to assess the situation and make judgments about what kinds of relief are needed in which areas and how they can best be distributed.
Please stay tuned as we present insights, information, and inspiration from a decidedly Orthodox Christian perspective. And now from our studios in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, here's our host, Father Christopher Metropoulos and Emmy Luvaris.
Today we're going to be speaking with Father John Oliver, who has written a book, Touching Heaven, Discovering Orthodox Christianity on the Island of Valam.
It's a very serious book written about his walk to Orthodoxy. And it is important. Why? Because it's the typical American religious experience that many people are going through today. They're going from one faith to the next, trying to find the ancient historical Church of Christ.
And in this book, we get a glimpse of how he came to the Orthodox faith, the impact it had on its life, and what it's meant for him. And it'll be a wonderful resource for our listeners and for those people who are interested in the Orthodox faith but are not quite sure how to go about discovering it.
And it's also, Emmy, our first program of the year 2005, and we thought it most appropriate to begin the year with those who are searching for the ancient historical Church of Christ.
Well, this is another one of those broadcasts that you're going to want to listen to closely and possibly even get a copy of. There are friends of yours who aren't listening right now. Shame on them. For their sake and maybe your own, why don't you get in touch with us and request a CD copy of this program? Just mention today's date and include a contribution to cover the expense of getting the CD to you. We suggest a minimum gift of $7, but consider being a bit more generous if you can. There are those who contact us and have a need for the CD but can't afford to contribute, and we, of course, do get the program out to them. And we're able to do that because of the generosity of listeners like yourself. Our web address is receive.org. Our phone number is 877. This is toll-free, 877-2, and then the word receive. And then our address is Box 4690, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33338. That's 4690, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33338. Or give us a call toll-free at 877, the number 2, and then the word receive.
I think it's important that relief and development organizations work together with governments and other entities positioned to provide disaster relief and assistance, and we are doing that.
Colin McGinnis is the chief operating officer for the IOCC, the International Orthodox Christian Charities, and spoke with Father Chris last Thursday about how the Orthodox charities are working to help the victims in Southeast Asia.
Colin, tell us what IOCC has been doing.
Well, IOCC is joining with its partner, Church World Service, in an ecumenical effort to respond quickly to the disaster. With CWS, we're developing a kind of regional response to the crisis, focusing initially on hardest hit areas in Sri Lanka, Indonesia, India, and elsewhere. And CWS disaster assessment and relief teams are on their way to the region now to assess the situation and make judgments about what kinds of relief are needed in which areas and how they can best be distributed.
This seems to be something, though, that we have not dealt with. I mean, this is the fourth largest earthquake in recorded history. There's unprecedented devastation. How are we going to deal with a massive disaster of this proportion?
Well, it is grim, and the death toll continues to rise. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that relief and development organizations work together with governments and other entities positioned to provide disaster relief and assistance, and we are doing that. One of the things that makes this so extraordinary is not just the numbers of dead, but the broad swath that the earthquake and the subsequent tsunamis cause geographically. And so that's why it's important to adopt a kind of a regional effort and to support those who are airlifting medical and shelter supplies to the regions affected, and that's what we're doing.
Well, our media ministry stands ready to support this effort, of course, and I know that IOCC has established a goal of $100,000 for the initial phase of the relief efforts. Tell us how our listeners can participate and assist in this great effort.
Well, we would be enormously grateful for the help of your listeners. If people would like to donate to IOCC, they can donate to our Asia Disaster Response, and that they can send checks to IOCC, P.O. Box 630225, Baltimore, Maryland, 21263-0225. People can also donate online at our website, which is www.iocc.org, or by calling toll-free at 1-877-803-IOCC. That's 1-877-803-IOCC. IOCC.
Thank you very much, Colin, and thank everyone at IOCC. And touch back with us in about a week or so to let us know how the relief efforts are going.
I will. Thanks very much, Father.
That contact information again for the Asia Disaster Response Efforts of the IOCC is Box 630225, Baltimore, Maryland, 21263-0225. That's Box 630225, Baltimore, Maryland, 21263-0225. You can send checks to that address, or you can donate online at iocc.org. And lastly, you can call them at 877-803-IOCC. And you can get all of that information again by going to our website at receive.org.
The SCOBA Hierarchs, that's the Standing Conference of Orthodox Bishops in America, has declared Sunday, January 16th, as Share the Light Sunday in every single parish in this nation.
That's great.
That's an Orthodox Christian parish. For us, again, that's a dream come true.
Oh, yeah. You
that's something we've been praying for years.
That comment was made by Father Chris during last week's Come Receive the Light broadcast. And one of the many opportunities you'll find on the Come Receive the Light website is how to become a Share the Light partner. Each week this program is aired throughout the U.S., and the expense, as you might imagine, is significant. You'll find details on our website about how you can join a growing group of people who have committed $1,000, $2,500, maybe up to $5,000 annually to keep this ministry going. Go to the website at receive.org and check out the Share the Light section. You'll also find details on Share the Light Sunday coming up January 16th. See what it means to be a partner and consider how you might join with us. Think about it and talk with the Lord about your possible involvement with Come Receive the Light. Peter Yelanis is our Come Receive the Light news reporter. Each week he reviews Orthodox Church news from around the world and presents highlights of the top stories during this program.
From New York, His Eminence Metropolitan Anthony, spiritual leader of the Greek Orthodox Metropolis of San Francisco, died on December 25th following a short illness. Metropolitan Anthony was diagnosed with Burkitt's lymphoma, a rare form of cancer, in November. He was 69 years old. In announcing the passing of Metropolitan Anthony of San Francisco, His Eminence Archbishop Demetrius of America, primate of the Greek Orthodox Church in America, was deeply moved. From Washington, D.C., His Beatitude Metropolitan Herman will celebrate the vigil for the Great Feast of Theophany, which commemorates the baptism of Jesus Christ on Wednesday, January 5th at 7 p.m. and the Festal Divine Liturgy on Thursday, January 6th at 10 a.m. Following the liturgy, he will preside at the Great Blessing of the Water at St. Nicholas Cathedral in Washington. And finally, from Jerusalem, the patriarchs and heads of the Christian churches in Jerusalem believe that there are small signs of hope despite the violence in the Holy Land. We go to Bethlehem to adore the mystery of Christmas. Despite the grave difficulties our people are still experiencing, together with the recent death of the President, Yasser Arafat affirmed the Christian leaders and their Christmas message. Nevertheless, there are in these days small signs of hope. Promises that soon some political prisoners will be released by the Israelis, and hopes of renewed efforts by all sides to resume the peace talks, the Christian leaders stated. And it is with similar hope that we at Come Receive the Light wish you and yours a blessed, happy, healthy, and prosperous 2005. With International Orthodox News of the Week, I'm Peter Yelanis.
Peter Yelanis and the news is a regular feature of Come Receive the Light each week. You can also stay up to date on Orthodox Church news from around the world by going to our website and clicking on the word news at the top of the homepage. That web address again is receive.org.
If any of your listeners are familiar with the religious landscape of America, then they can appreciate what it might mean to grow up both in the Southern Pentecostal Church of God and the Northern United Church of Christ. I seem to remember part of the year being loud and dramatic, and the other part being dull and quiet.
All over the spectrum.
Indeed, yeah, indeed.
And now our feature interview this week with author Father John Oliver.
My grandfather was a Church of God minister, a deeply good man, and my family would visit my grandparents in Florida during the summers. The rest of the year was lived in Ohio, and because my father was a historian, we traveled through a variety of Protestant churches in search of an expression of the Christian faith that was close to what he understood to be the faith of antiquity. So I do not begrudge these churches at all, by the way, because each of them, in their own way, contributed a brick in the road to the Orthodox Church, you might say. So rounding out my experience, and this is part of who I am today, I think. I've been privileged with a broad exposure to various faith religious movements in the U.S., but rounding up my experience, as I recall, were Jewish neighbors, a Baptist high school, various churches from the Presbyterian and the Christian and Missionary Alliance traditions, a brief interest in a charismatic community, a fascination for Zen Buddhism, as well as Native America, a Free Methodist University, a Quaker college, and finally a still lingering identification with hippies.
So where did you trip over Orthodox Christianity?
How did you discover Orthodox Christianity?
I was living in Ohio in the spring of 1991 and was introduced to an Orthodox priest, a man I still consider to be one of the finest persons and finest priests I've ever met. And we met one morning at a restaurant for breakfast, and I recall very clearly he was asking me about my interests and my background, especially my Christian background. And he asked very clearly, he said, who are your the people who influenced you? And my response was, St. Augustine. And he said, ah, yes, I see. Well, that's pretty much when we think things started to go wrong. And so it went, you know, and we were still gathered there close to the lunch hour. So even 2 or 3 hours later, while I was still sitting there, I knew that something had gotten a hold of me, you know, something that was deep but beyond description. And so I began attending his parish, probably experiencing the same reservations that a lot of people do, a lot of Western Christians, when they're coming into the Orthodox Church. So I began attending his parish, and it seemed that for every book he would give me to read, he would request that I attend a service. And that seemed to be the arrangement. I give you a book, you come to this parish. Roughly a year and a half later, I was baptized.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your book for a minute. Tell us about your experience on the island.
Sure. I was living in Florida, 1994, and received in the mail a copy of Again magazine. And according to habit, I paged through the whole issue with the intention of reading every article, but of course managed to read just a few. But the final article in the magazine was about Vallam. And the article was written with a kind of skill and care that communicated the author's love for the place.
Let's stop there a minute.
Sure.
Tell us about the island of Alam. What is it? Where is it?
The island of Alam is located in the largest freshwater lake of the Western Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere, I'm sorry, Lake Ladoga. It is near the border of Finland. It's still considered part of Russia.
Okay.
So we're talking the north western edge of Russia. Valam is on the same latitude, roughly, as Anchorage, Alaska.
So you're going to unpack for us your experience there on the island. Go ahead, Father.
Right, indeed. So after I read the article, I contacted the author just to express my appreciation, and he said, well, guess what? We're headed over. Do you want to join us? So I scraped together a few dollars, had some time, and went. When I landed at Valam, I expected a primitive experience. Was not entirely disappointed. I, along with two dozen or so other pilgrims, went to Valam with the intention of helping to renovate a portion of the monastery. We went over as Christians, not as tourists, and that's a critical distinction. We went over to enter into the life to the degree that we were able. So we would we camped on a satellite island that is near the main island at Valam. We were there for a couple of weeks, and while we were there, we participated in, again, this is a rough approximation, but we participated in the kind of daily life that goes on at the monastery. We did a lot of physical labor. We went to church quite a bit, and we also took some time out to enjoy the natural beauty of Valam. So it became clear right away that the kind of life to which we were being exposed was an ancient one, and that it had a certain rhythm to it, the way they spent their time, the monastics there, a sense of deliberateness, I think. When they were in church, that's what they did. When they worked, that's what they did. When they gathered in the trapeza to eat, that's what they did. So there was a certain intentionality to it that, you know, was actually very refreshing to me personally, because I was coming from a life that was about as substantive as smoke on the wind. You know, I had no clear sense of where I was going in life, so there was some personal disarray that I brought with me. And I stepped off the island and into this ancient way of life, or at least exposed to it. And so the people I met, these were people who made a significant impression on me, not necessarily for what they said, but because of who they were.
And how did that experience change your life?
Well, I think that one way I describe in the book is that coming back from Valam, it was a little bit like taking the shoot off of a plant and trying to plant it in soil elsewhere, hoping that it will grow into a life of its own. So I went to Valam and was exposed to a set of Christian values that that don't have much room in this culture. Values such as poverty of spirit, you know, humility, obedience, chastity. These things that were common currency at Valam were things that were not entirely a part of my experience as an American Christian. And that's more my fault, I'm sure, than anything else. But being exposed to the way of life, not just in a book, but seeing that these are living, breathing human beings who have voluntarily taken up the life in Christ to a depth I've only read about previously.
Could you be more specific? Could you lift up one of the situations there?
Sure. I think, frankly, the way that a couple of the... well, here's a wonderful example, actually. And it's an example that comes from not a monastic, but from a woman who lived in a small village near the monastery. She was, by all appearance, a peasant woman, and she came into a service one night. This was fairly late, probably 8 or 9 p.m.
And I remember she came into this long sanctuary, actually it's the nave of the church in Vallam, and she came in, and I would have estimated her age to be maybe 65 or so, possibly even 70. It was hard to catch a glimpse of her face because it was covered, you know, with a head covering. But she came into the church, and she found a place to stand. And that was a night when we had probably an eight-hour service. And I would periodically look over at this woman and notice that, with the exception of making the sign of the cross, she did not move. She stayed rooted in her place. She had a kind of physical diligence that suggested, number one, that she'd done this for a long time, and secondly, that that Christian worship unfolds in the presence of an awesome God. Now, there's something humorous about this story, and that is that on the peripheral of this nave, you know, there are benches where people can sit, and all of my colleagues who are 18 and 20 and 22 years old at the time, they were all seated. Sometimes the head was being held up barely by the hands. People were catching cat naps. You can tell that we were not in this woman's league. She was three times our age, but she also had three times of our stamina, three times our self-discipline, I think. So that's just a snapshot. It's a portrait of what to me was a way of life.
So by writing your book, what were you hoping to accomplish? I think you alluded to that with what Frank mentioned. So it basically, do you feel that that's helped?
The book was written for anyone who hungers for meaning. And by making it autobiographical, which is something that I probably would tend to discourage in general, I'm much more interested in other people's experiences with the Lord than I am with my own, sometimes at least. But I think that there is a kind of fundamental hunger for meaning and for transcendence, for an experience of spiritual life that simply does not blip along with the culture. And so I wrote the book from that vantage point, that it would speak to the heart of any who hungered for meaning, for who hungered for a sense of transcendent possibility. While I was at Vallam, I caught a vision. However small, you know, however momentary, I caught a vision of what I thought was possible for my life. So the book, I thought, should contribute to a vision, however small, however momentary, for other people about what is possible for their life.
Father, do you have to travel all the way to Vallam for this kind of connection to spirituality?
Of course not. I mean, you can go to Vallam to find it, but you can find it in your everyday life. You can find it in your parish when you visit your parish and you worship. You can find it even in your private prayer life. But, of course, the ultimate expression of that spirituality will come from our experiences within our church. There's a seriousness to the journey that I really love that Father John spoke of, a seriousness that I would have to say I find in many who convert to the faith when I do not see such an urgency in those who have actually been born and are considered to be called cradle Orthodox. This journey, though, is more than just a journey. There's a result to the journey. There's an end position to the journey, if you will. What is that? That position brings us to a maturity in our spirituality. And the maturity of the spirituality then brings on fruits in our everyday life. What are those fruits? How do you deal with the spiritual poverty that exists in the world today? How does your family deal with it? How do you raise your children in this society? And if we don't have a seriousness of our faith, we do not have a maturity, if we're not grounded in spirituality, you can go to Vallam, you can go to the end of the world. You won't have it. So it's very, very important that we can also find that spirituality that Father John spoke about today. That is a serious journey that gives us maturity, and that also then, of course, brings around the fruits for everyday living.
Come Receive the Light is a production of the Orthodox Christian Network and is supported in part by Dordas Financial, creating customized programs designed to help grow, protect, and conserve their clients' financial resources. They can be reached at dordas.com or by calling toll-free 1-877-474-7438. Remember, Share the Light Sunday coming up January 16th. Make sure your church is going to be involved. And please contact the IOCC and help them with their relief efforts for the devastated areas of Southeast Asia. Their contact information again is Box 630225, Baltimore, Maryland, 21263. You can send checks to that address or you can donate online at IOCC.org or call them at 1-877-803-IOCC. Thank you for listening and praying for this ministry, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.